All right, then I think we're ready to call the vote. Very good.
Fritz?
This is a lot of good work by staff and citizens, and it's delightful to hear that this, actually it's good to hear that there's still some questions to be resolved and that to hear Commissioner Fish say that this is a living document, because it will grow and change over time, and we need to find funding for it. That's always been the challenge with master planning processes, is that in the past we haven't connected them with the funding that's necessary. So I certainly recognize that and hope that we will work towards the funding. And congratulations. I don't know how long has this process been going on?
In my remarks, I was going to take it back to Commissioner Salzman.
Yeah, I was thinking that these things don't just happen in 6 months or a year. So,
I get the credit at the time it's presented, but also the blame for things in the pipeline. So I think it probably evens out.
Yeah, so certainly Commissioner Salzman and Commissioner Fish, good job. Aye.
Fish.
So I want to begin by acknowledging the tremendous leadership that my colleague Dan Salzman gave to this process, and we've heard this described as a model in terms of community outreach. So I'm proud to be building on the tradition that he has started. And also, we should acknowledge Matt Grum of your staff. If I didn't acknowledge him, since we share an office, we share a common door, I'd hear about it. So I want to acknowledge Matt Grum's good work. I want to just say that while I have known Carol Mayer Reed by reputation, and I have seen her at public presentations of one kind or another, this is the first time I've actually had a chance to work with her, albeit in a limited capacity, since I've only been the Parks Commissioner for less than 2 months. But I want to say to you, Carol, that I think the vision that you have translated into a written document is breathtaking and is beautiful. And I thank you for setting the bar very high. And I thank you also for helping us as a council meet a goal that we communicate regularly, but perhaps we fall short in meeting. And that is making sure that every part of our community enjoys great parks. We know that there are some communities that don't have as many parks as others, that are parks deficient, don't always get the same attention. And I think the statement we're making here today is that North Portland and this wonderful park deserves a world-class park. And as Commissioner Fritz noted, there is the question of funding. The range that we've estimated is between $7 and $8 million to put this vision into reality, and I am charged with finding those dollars over time. So thank you for your great work. Brett, thank you for your leadership. And Kip, thank you for your tremendous work. I'm proud to lead this bureau and all the great people there. To the citizens who gave so much time to make this process work, and all you have to do is read the accompanying documents we've been presented with to know how much value the citizens brought. And it's nice to know that it is a dynamic process where voices are heard and not just engaged. And so I thank you for the time you've taken to give us your feedback. I have two young kids, and while I don't live in North Portland, I live in Northeast Portland. I have occasion to come to this park pretty regularly, I would say primarily because of Cathedral Park Jazz Festival. And our friends at the festival have raised some concerns with this design, which I have committed to addressing over time. They have some ideas they want to share with us. But it's also, in my opinion, one of the most beautiful places in Portland at dusk. As the lights are coming up and the bridge begins to be illuminated and you're on the St. John's side looking towards Forest Park, I really don't know of a more beautiful setting in our city. And it's also wonderful to learn that it is one of our most historic settings as well. So as Parks Commissioner, I'm charged with moving this process forward, and I make that commitment. But I want to thank everybody for their tremendous work, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Salzman?
Well, this is a great master plan. I want to thank the wonderful employees at the Parks Bureau and Carol Mayer Reed and the other consultants who helped and the public. Certainly one of the things I take pride in as my tenure as Parks Commissioner was developing many master plans for property we own that's currently usable, but also property we own that doesn't have any planned public access right now. So particularly in East Portland, there's a lot of areas we develop master plans for. But this is a park that's clearly in need of some care and attention. It's also, I think as Carol Mayer Reed noted, it's an area that's transitioning from its industrial roots, which still has that, but it also certainly has a lot more people living in St. John's now in and around the park. And as that happens, the need to make the park more family-friendly is very apparent. Improve the boat ramps, make all the other improvements, I think makes it a park that will really serve the population of St. John's and indeed of the city well in the future. So I also want to acknowledge the Port of Portland's work as well. But this is a great master plan, and next up, funding it. Hi.
Leonard.
I do want to acknowledge the challenge behind reaching a consensus on a plan as complex as this. It takes a lot of hard work. And so I want to tip my hat to the citizens that worked on this, the other stakeholders, but particularly the Parks Bureau, Commissioner Saltzman, and Fish. Aye.
Adams.
Well, thank you to Andrew and Barbara and Bill and Jerry for your work and for testifying on this. Echo the thanks to the great consultants we had and all the citizens involved, the staff. Hats off to Commissioner Saltzman, who got it started, and Commissioner Fish, who brought it home. I look forward to soon enjoying the improvements called for in this master plan. Aye. Resolution passes. Can we do item 145 very quickly? But Commissioner Saltzman, you can't lead because...
Okay. 145, accept a grant in the amount of $498,726 from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Regions 9 and 10, for the West Coast Collaborative Diesel Emissions Reduction Program.
I'll be very quick, but I wanted to pull this item today to accept a grant for nearly $500,000 from the EPA for the West Coast Collaborative Diesel Emissions Reduction Program, and I want to thank the leadership of Commissioner Saltzman and his staff for the hard work. This is also consistent with the work of Commissioner Leonard on the biofuels. It's been a collaborative partnership between Multnomah County, City Fleet, Purchasing, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and Michelle Krim from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is here to provide just a little bit of information.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Mary Adams and fellow commissioners. The ordinance before you is to accept a grant for almost $500,000 from the Environmental Protection Agency for a project that we're calling the Portland Clean Diesel Partnership. And to give you just briefly a little perspective, this diesel particulate matter is a very critical issue in Multnomah County and in Portland. 90% of the cancer risk of living here in this urban environment is directly related to our exposure to diesel particulate matter. And so that's one of the main reasons that we focused on this. And then additionally, there are hot spots within the city of Portland, particularly North Portland, where you have the convergence of freeways and rail and barge traffic and industrial truck traffic that makes the exposure for folks who live in North Portland as well as downtown more significant. So this effort really started with a letter from the Sustainable Development Commission to Commissioner Saltzman and Multnomah County Commissioner Kogan, asking the city and the county to do two things, and that was to develop a plan to retrofit our own fleet, which means adding particulate filters and other devices to the exhaust of our diesel equipment to clean up our own equipment. And they also asked the city and county to look at adopting a clean diesel construction contracting policy, which basically means that when we hire private contractors to do publicly funded work for us, that we also require them to have clean diesel equipment or meet clean diesel standards. So the majority of this grant money is going to fund the actual retrofits on the pieces of equipment. We'll be able to retrofit about 25 pieces of city construction equipment, predominantly in the Water Bureau and the Bureau of Transportation. It will also retrofit about 19 pieces of Multnomah County's equipment, and it will also retrofit about 20 pieces of private contractor equipment that is being used on publicly funded projects at the city and the county. So it provides us an opportunity to develop a draft policy of that nature and to pilot it to really figure out what's going to be make the most sense and be the most workable for that kind of a policy in terms of the types of construction projects that are targeted, the types of equipment, what kind of blend of ultra-low sulfur, biofuel, retrofit, and idling requirements. So I really just want to thank, it's a big partnership. It involves the Sustainable Development Commission, leadership from Commissioner Kogan, Commissioner Saltzman in terms of their leadership and staff support, the city fleet, the Bureau of Purchases at the city, and our counterparts at the county, and then also the Oregon Environmental Council. Kevin Downing has been phenomenally helpful in technical assistance for this project. So I look forward to working with the bureaus to draft this policy, particularly Environmental Services, Transportation, Water, and the Portland Development Commission, to help us craft what a policy like this might look like and how it could roll out, and what projects could we identify to pilot it on.
Questions from council or comments?
I do have a question. Of course, since 2006, sulfur has been virtually eliminated from diesel, which was the major factor in causing the particulates to pollute the air. So does this analysis you're doing take that into consideration?
It does, and it is one of the reasons why we were focusing on construction equipment where that ultra-low sulfur diesel requirement is not in place yet. And so in the calculations that we did with the Environmental Protection Agency, the use of biofuels and ultra-low sulfur diesel were calculated into the emission reductions that we expect to see with the addition of these retrofits. And so that was all part of the grant proposal, and it was considered in what we estimated the results to be.
Because I would hate to put devices that cost a lot of money on vehicles that, in fact, aren't having the emission problems
right.
that existed prior to 2006. And then additionally, any vehicles we've bought since, as you know, January 1st, 2008, have standards that exceed the emissions for even gasoline engines. So there's virtually no soot problem. So we wouldn't consider retrofitting any of our apparatus purchased since 2008.
Right, except for some of the heavy construction equipment does not yet have to meet those same stringent emission requirements just yet. So this is more looking at our older fleet and the older fleet that is used by private contractors where, without the addition of these emission control devices, coupled with the use of biofuel and ultra-low sulfur diesel, we're not going to see those sort of reductions
okay,
in that older fleet.
I guess my bigger concern is you're looking at it a case-by-case basis
yes.
on a particular vehicle.
Yep,
not, okay.
exactly.
Great, thanks.
Yep.
Any other questions? Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks.
Is anyone that would like to testify on Council Item Number 145? If not, Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Well, thank you, Mayor Adams, for pulling that from consent. It's important to know that we're getting $500,000 of federal money, and also very interesting the details of what the grant is going to do. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I'm very pleased that we finally got this grant. I want to recognize particularly Amy True in my office, who was very excited and played a key role, I think, in helping to get all the people at the table to work on this grant application. So it's good good for us to be recognized, and I'm sure we will do a good job. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Well, I wanted to pull it to recognize Commissioner Saltzman's leadership and Amy's great work with what is now the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. This is your accomplishment, and we'll work hard to put it to good use. Thanks. Aye. All right. 145 passes. That gets us to the regular agenda, I believe. And unless there are objections from council, and I know we've got to read, I think, the titles, I would like to move these back to my office, 158 and 159.
158, authorized acquisition of vehicles for use by city bureaus at $91,605. 159, authorize a contract and provide for payment to furnish replacement vehicles at $1,349,500.
The reason for moving it back to my office is, given the financial situation of the city, I just want to spend an extra couple of days to look through and make sure that all of this is absolutely necessary. Unless there are objections, it'll be so done.
When you do that, one thing I was interested in those two was what the policy is regarding the timeline for replacement of vehicles, like we heard for the fire engine right. in the previous one.
Yep. I want to double check to see if we can stretch out. Implicit in your question is part of what I want to double check is can we stretch out more life out of some of the existing vehicles that would be replaced given our deteriorating revenue picture. All right, so move back. That gets us to 160, I believe. Could you please read the title for item number 160?
Accept bid of Nutter Corporation for the South Waterfront Park Improvement Projects for $2,166,610.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Good morning, Mayor Adams, members of the City Council. For the record, I'm Jeff Baer with the Bureau of Purchases, and with me is Sandra Bertos from the Portland Parks and Recreation. And we're here before you to seek authorization to execute a contract with Nutter Corporation, who's a local construction contracting firm, in the amount of $2,166,610 for the South Waterfront Park Improvement Project. And Sandra's here in case there's questions related to the project itself. And just a couple of notable facts about the process that we went through. We went and did a competitive bid process. It was very competitive. We received six different bids on this particular project, and all of them came underneath the $2.6 million construction estimate. And as you noted, as I noted here, we're awarding this contract for $2.1 million. They did have 18.1% minority women and emerging small business subcontract participation on this, and we're also still looking for two additional divisions of work subcontracting, so we're expecting that number to rise slightly.
And did we have zero participation in minority business enterprise. Did we get any bids from minority contractors that were qualified but not selected?
I know that they received some. I don't know that the reason why offhand. I have to look through this real quickly. What it looks like is that the prices for the MBE subcontractors came in higher.
Okay, but you have an opportunity with further subcontracting
Correct.
To try to improve the award to minority business enterprises.
Okay. So I just because you raised that, Mayor Adams, I'm just curious how small businesses can compete with larger businesses if we just traditionally award to the lowest bidder.
The way it works, Commissioner Leonard, is that what we require them to do is a good faith effort requirement, and what that means is that we identify the divisions of work for subcontract opportunities as part of the solicitation package, and they're required to, once we hold a pre-bid meeting, they're required to contact the minority women emerging small businesses that attend the pre-bid. Plus, we also provide them with a list of those firms to contact. And so it's really a solicitation for subcontracts to the MWNESBs. And whatever came in the lowest price subcontract, that's who they would award the contract to.
No, I get that.
Okay.
I was just asking, how does one that's a small business owner just ever end up getting picked, given the economies of scale with the larger businesses that traditionally get picked? I mean, do we somehow take that into account? Do we have the flexibility of not necessarily always taking the lowest bidder and using some other criterion?
If we were to do an alternative contracting method, for example, which would be the traditional construction manager general contracting or the design build process, mm-hmm. that's where we could use more an evaluative process, which does require an exemption before the council to approve that. In this case, we did not seek an exemption. We did the traditional low bid process.
If I could, though, since the mayor's charged me with doing the update of our diversity study in terms of contracting, Commissioner Leonard, I think you raise a great point. And one of the things we'll be looking at as part of that process, well, at some point soon we'll be coming to the council with a recommendation for selecting a consultant vendor to help us undertake that study. But we're also interested in the experience of TriMet, the Housing Authority of Portland, Multnomah County, and other jurisdictions to see how they've done it. And your point is particularly resonant, I think, because we, Housing Authority of Portland, within the last year, opened a new development where I believe the participation was roughly at 40%. Hmm. And what they did is they worked aggressively with Walsh Construction to make sure that Walsh, in turn, had subcontracts with folks. And, in fact, there were opportunities for entrepreneurs who actually live in some public housing. So we're going to look at all those creative ideas of how we can beef it up, and I appreciate your comments.
Great. Thank you.
The other thing that we'll be coming forward with soon is the local business enterprise designation that would give, where law allows, give us some opportunities to provide RFP potential points to locally owned businesses. So, but the disparity, you're right, the disparity study is our single best opportunity to be able to be more flexible in answer to your good question.
And I would just add one comment to that. You know, we'll be looking at those barriers that exist for small businesses in doing business with a city like us.
Great. Thanks.
Any other discussion for this staff panel? Yeah.
I didn't see the confidence level for the accuracy of the bid.
I believe the original, it's a level of confidence as optimal.
It was in there.
And it's...
That's the highest?
I don't... Or I'm not sure. Having developed that policy, I would question whether it could be optimal. But...
I'd have to look at the criteria.
That is what it says. I read it in the document, though.
Okay.
It is in the document, yes.
Yeah. So this is a guaranteed maximum price?
I wouldn't say that.
It's optimally guaranteed.
So this reasonable people can disagree on this, but I think this would be rated high. Optimal, if I remember the policy correctly, would be a guaranteed maximum price.
It's been a while since I've looked at the criteria for what optimal means, and if I remember, I think it's really close to fully designed work, and we've got a hard bid contract, knowing that there are some things that occur during the project that could inflate or deflate the price.
So my concern, the reason for my question, is that the bid is almost a third of the maximum price, and I would not want to see ongoing amendments adding more and more till it went back up. So I'm hoping that's not going to happen with a high level of confidence.
Well, Portland Parks and Rec would not like to see that either, Commissioner. And as you know, if it does happen, it's likely to come back before council, and we would expect to incur the wrath of all of my colleagues if that was, in fact, how this contract.
You can be so optimally assured.
I have a high degree of confidence that there will be pushback from our colleagues.
So you're from Parks, right?
Yes.
So it sounds like the legislative intent of council is if this creeps up over the 2.166 price, that we'd like you to come back to council.
Right. So that is the contract that we're asking to award. However, we always, as you know, hold out at least a 10% construction contingency. Every project has adds. That is how construction projects work. In fact, there are some items we are actually looking to enhance the park a bit because it came in so low. It's PDC's, funding, and we want to make sure that this neighborhood gets, the best park it can for the dollars.
You can imagine, though, that I know your intent, but you can imagine that those words are like fingernails on a chalkboard to us. So,
I guess since I was at a recent South Portland Water Neighborhood Association meeting, and there were some concerns raised about whether we had put enough child-friendly amenities into this park. I would view changing the scope of the work to include some new amenity as being different than construction costs under this current scope of work going up, and I think my colleagues would too. So if
well said.
Enough said.
And I think we should also reward good behavior. You've gotten really good prices. And
thank you.
So I don't want the message to be here that we're criticizing you at all. If it takes another 10% to add some amenities and you're still well below what we budget, I think that's outstanding and I appreciate your work.
And I would just add, too, that we in the bids that we've been receiving in, we've been getting a lot more aggressive bids from contractors, and
yes.
I think it's because of the economic climate that's going
that's
on
excellent.
Right now. So,
thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Has anyone signed up to testify on this?
Would
anyone in the room like to testify on item number 160? All right. Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fritz?
It's very good to be seeing a contract for the park in South Waterfront, having been on the Planning Commission when it was just a twinkle in various people's eyes. And so a good job on the contracting. Aye.
Fish?
Yeah, I'm pleased that we're already under budget and that we're moving forward. And the next announcement we'll have at council is the name for the new South Waterfront Park, which, just to heighten the drama, I will withhold at this meeting. We'll make an announcement later. So thanks for your good work. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, it's me, isn't it?
No, just kidding. Dan, the rules apparently are that you have to be dead for 3 years.
And
there was a request of a living a community leader, and I politely told him that we'd have to arrange either
right.
for his early
that.
Demise.
I forgot his
early demise, or he'd have to leave the country, be declared dead by his insurance company, and then we could name him, and then he could come back. But
I'm sorry, I forgot that conversation. Anyway, it's really it's great to see the money here and to see this park become a reality. This is Unlike St. John's, St. John's is a neighborhood in transition. South Waterfront is a new neighborhood, and it needs a neighborhood park. And I want to thank Parks for doing great work and procurement, purchasing as well. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
No, thanks for your work. Let's try to get those MBE numbers up. But appreciate the work thus far. Aye. Item number 160 is approved. Would you please read the title for item number 161?
Allow evening meetings on motion of the council.
Commissioner Fritz.
I'm really excited to bring this to council. It's one of the promises from my campaign and indeed from my life as a citizen organizer over 17 years. The code currently says that we can have evening meetings the third Wednesday of the month. That was instituted by Commissioner Hales quite some time ago. And what this code amendment will do will allow flexibility so that there could be night meetings any Wednesday or Thursday as a continuation from the regularly scheduled Wednesday morning meeting. It's only allowed by motion of the council and obviously has to have at least three people attending. And it does require a two-week window to allow for the auditor and others to schedule due notices. And I want to acknowledge that it will require additional flexibility and additional evening meetings by my colleagues and by the staff. The virtue of it, of course, is that it will allow working people to attend meetings that, especially on issues that are particularly of concern to neighbors. So I'm, as I say, very excited to bring it, and I ask for your support.
Do you have anyone testifying, or do you have anyone presenting?
No.
Okay. Do we have a first off, any discussion or questions from council? Do we have anyone signed up?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on item 161? Then it's an emergency ordinance.
Yeah, and if I might just explain why it's an emergency ordinance, there had been some suggestion that we would do the Columbia River Crossing discussion next week in the evening, and so that was why we brought this forward as an emergency. But we might in the next month want to do an evening meeting, and if so, it would be nice to have the flexibility to do that. So that's why I'm asking for your support so that it can go into effect immediately.
Unless there's additional council discussion, I'd ask that Carla please call the roll.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
I'm pleased to support this, and I have noted when I have the opportunity to address neighborhood associations or coalitions or groups in the evening, I always see different kinds of people that I don't usually see at City Hall, and that I think acknowledges that people that have day jobs or are geographically remote from downtown or have other challenges don't usually find our calendar for day meetings convenient. And we do get a different mix of people, and we do get different kinds of testimony when we do evening sessions. The last time we did an evening session, I got a blistering email from someone watching it on TV who criticized the fact that I ate during the meeting. So I've now also learned to budget some time before our evening meetings to eat so that I don't offend those sensibilities. But I will say that we have had some outstanding evening sessions, again, with people who testify who often don't get a chance to when our meetings are held during the day. So, Commissioner Fritz, thank you for your leadership on this, and I understand what we're doing is giving us the flexibility to schedule these meetings, which I think is appropriate. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, this looks like a good idea, and I'm pleased to support it. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for bringing this forward. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
I, too, want to thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for making this, I think, very common sense change, and I look forward to more council meetings in the evening. Item number 161 is approved. Could you please read the title, Carla, for item 162?
Grant a franchise to Northwest Natural Gas Company for a period of 20 years.
Commissioner Fritz.
And Mary Beth Henry from the Office of Cable Communication and Franchise Management is here. What this ordinance does, and I'm very pleased to announce that the city and Northwest Natural have reached agreement on a modern franchise. The franchise will establish terms and conditions for Northwest Natural's use of the streets within the city for transmitting and distributing gas, and will update a formal legal relationship that had otherwise remained unchanged since Oregon's territorial days. The franchise is made possible by the goodwill and cooperation of both parties. The original legal relationship between the City of Portland and Northwest Natural dates to the period before Oregon statehood, when the City of Portland was a self-governing part of the Oregon Territory. In 1859, the Territory of Oregon granted Henry D. Green, Northwest Natural's predecessor, the authority to operate a gas system in Portland. Under authority of this territorial grant to Mr. Green, Northwest Natural has operated within Portland for almost 150 years. We were able to develop a modern franchise agreement that helps the city and Northwest Natural better serve the interests of Portland residents. The franchise reflects the city's energy policy and delineates rights and responsibilities of both parties. It outlines the respective responsibilities of both parties for addressing any issues that may arise over the next 20 years, which in the context seems like a relatively short time frame. This agreement represents a win for our city, our citizens, and Northwest Natural and its customers. Thanks to Commissioner Saltzman for prior leadership of this office leading up to this agreement, and to both Northwest Natural and our franchise office. Sandy Hart of Northwest Natural and Mary Beth Henry of the city are here to answer any questions the council may have. Or did you have any other comments, either of you? Would you like to say something?
I would just like to thank Ben Walters of the City Attorney's Office and Christine Leon of the Portland Bureau of Transportation for their work in the negotiations. And the franchise fee estimate for the current fiscal year from Northwest Natural is just about $12.5 million.
And I'd just like to say thank you to the diligent work on behalf of Mary Beth and Ben. And for Commissioner Saltzman's also his help on this and getting us to this point. It was a lot of hard work, and we appreciate where we're at.
My question, Mary Beth, didn't we do this last year?
the ordinance that we brought forward in December was the settlement ordinance, approved the settlement of the audit, and now we go through the franchise process.
Thank you for pointing that out. I just want to say, This is, as Commissioner Fritz said, this is an historic moment in its own right. I want to thank Northwest Natural for entering into this franchise agreement. I happen to be looking through your 150th anniversary report. Mm-hmm. Really fascinated by the historical photographs, and one of the things I learned was that, well, Northwest Natural, or Portland Coke and Gas, I guess maybe was the original name, actually had the original water supply system for the city of Portland. And that was pretty, I didn't know that.
Hopefully before. Not through the same pipes.
Hopefully not. Didn't mix with coal tar. Maybe.
You never know. Location.
Between 3 and 5, it's gas.
So I assume at some point that was transferred to the City of Portland Water Bureau, but I thought that was a little piece of history I didn't know. But anyway, thank you very much. Thanks.
Well, I'd like to highlight Section 5.2 and your willingness. Northwest Natural has been a great co-steward of the right-of-way in terms of when you have to dig something up, which actually you're doing in front of my house right now. When you put the streets back together, you do so in the highest quality manner. So I want to recognize Northwest Natural for that. That is not true of all of our other franchisees. And so 5.2 is the guarantee to the city. And I know you're working to extend this and strengthen this and all the other franchise agreements, is a warranty to the city taxpayers that when we have a contractor on behalf of one of our franchisees that open up the street and do a poor job, that we can go back and fix it at the expense of the franchisee. So your willingness, I don't think we'll ever have to use it, but your willingness to be held to that high standard as transportation commissioner, I very much appreciate.
Thank you. Pride ourselves on our work.
Any other discussion from council for these individuals? All right. Anyone signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on item number 162? If not, I think we're ready to call the roll.
It passes to second reading.
Oh, sorry. I'm getting too excited here. Passes
Thanks
to second
much.
Reading.
Thank you.
Thank you. Would you please read the title for item 163?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Clean Water Services and a mutual agreement in order with the Department of Environmental Quality and Clean Water Services to temporarily divert wastewater flows from the Fano Basin to Clean Water Services, settle past permit violations, and resolve potential future compliance matters.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This is an intergovernmental agreement that allows the Bureau of Environmental Services to move forward on its reconstruction of the Fano Pump Station and Forest Main Sewer Project in Southwest Portland. Jan Betts, Dean Marriott, and Bill Ryan are here to answer any questions on this it is a critically important agreement, which is why it's an emergency as we move forward with plans to replace the Forest Main Sewer.
Thank you. Dean. Good morning, Mayor, members of the council. I can be extremely brief, or I can say nothing at all. It's your comment, your decision.
Well, this is, for the record, because this is such an arduous project that
yes.
I think we both worked on over the years. If just for the sake of the record, if you could sort of go through quickly what the issue is, because it is complex and arduous. I'd
be glad to. Well, good morning. Dean Marriott, Environmental Services Director, and as Commissioner Salzman said, with me is Bill Ryan, our Chief Engineer, and Jan Betts from the City Attorney's Office. They've been working very diligently on this project for some time. This all began in about 1999 and 2000 when we set out to replace the five aging pump stations in southwest Portland that were in need of replacement. We decided at that time, after careful study, to consolidate those five stations in one location, the new Fano pump station, which actually is in Washington County, just outside of the border of Portland. To do that, we had to build a pressure line to pump the sewage that flowed downhill to that pump station back up over the hill to Portland for treatment. It is that pressure line that we have had a problem with. Since we put it in service, it has failed on several occasions, including a couple of times in which we were quite concerned about the public's safety. And as you know, a pressure line is under pressure, and when it bursts, it can cause a dangerous situation. So, after several of these failures and repairs, we shut the line down last spring to do a comprehensive evaluation of the line from beginning to end. After that comprehensive evaluation, we decided last fall to permanently shut the line down, that it was, frankly, not salvageable. And we decided to embark on a replacement at that point. In doing so, when we shut the line down, we needed to send that flow from about 9,000 households in Portland, southwest Portland, to Clean Water Services in Washington County for treatment. This agreement you have today sort of memorializes that and formalizes the relationship so that if there comes a time when, due to heavy rainfall, we overwhelm their system, that it's clear the process for determining who will be held accountable by the State Department of Environmental Quality is laid out and is clearly delineated. It also describes what our responsibilities are to control the flow, minimize the flow, and to alert them as to when the situation requires their assistance. So those are the kinds of things that are laid out in this agreement. What you will see shortly coming to you is a series of contracts to complete the design of the work and to authorize the construction of the replacement, which will take place starting this summer, we hope, over the next 3 years. And after that period, we'll have the new system back up and operating, and we can put this chapter behind us. I will say we're not used to coming in front of the City Council and talking about systems that don't work. The city is in the process of litigating against the designers and contractors of the pressure line. It's not the kind of project that we normally are in front of you describing, and what we're trying to do now is make the best of a bad situation. We did not want to continue to try to operate a system that, frankly, could be unsafe. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Questions from council? All right. Do we have anyone signed up to testify on this matter? Thank you, folks.
No one signed up.
Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on item number 163, emergency ordinance? All right. Unless there's additional discussion on council, Carla, can you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Well, as Dean Marriott said, this is not a usual situation, nor one that we would like, but I appreciate it coming to council on the regular agenda so that we could get an explanation. It is a $5.2 million contract, so it's a significant expenditure, and it's definitely necessary. So, aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams.
I want to thank you for your work on addressing this difficult situation. Expectations on minority contracting, women-owned contracting, emergency small businesses still apply, even though it's an emergency. And I know you embrace that. Aye. Item 163 is approved. Carla, can you please read the title for 164?
Create a local improvement district to construct sanitary sewer improvements to serve properties located on Northeast Gertz Circle and Northeast Gertz Court in the Delta Wood Phase 2 Local Improvement District.
This is a second reading, vote only. Could you please call the roll?
Fritz?
It was such a delightful hearing last week to hear from the property owners and realize that we are providing basic services in this area of Northeast Portland. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Item 164 is approved. Can you please read the title for item 165?
Authorize a contract and provide for payment for construction of the West Wet Weather Screening Facility at the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant, project number E05512.
This is a second reading. Would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Item 165 is approved. Would you please read the title for item 166?
Authorize the solicitation of proposals for design and professional support services to city staff charged with designing the city's new emergency coordination center.
Commissioner Leonard.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. Mayor Potter and then Adams have both asked me to oversee a project that would create for the city a new emergency coordination center that the office of the Portland Office of Emergency Management would move to. We identified the site most appropriately in the vicinity of the current Bureau of Emergency Communications, and we have, as part of that process, acquired five of the properties. Is that the total amount of properties?
Yes,
we've acquired all five properties now, some of which were occupied through voluntary negotiations. Immediately adjacent to the south of BOEC. Eventually, the plan is to have an enclave that would be secure from anybody but employees of the Portland Office of Emergency Management or of the Bureau of Emergency Communications and, as you will hear from David Schaff, employees of the Portland Water Bureau. When we started this project, we were in a different economic climate. And as the conditions in our city, state, and nation, if not the world, have changed, we recognize that at the Bureau of Development Services, because we depend completely on permit fees to keep our employees working, we were having a precipitous drop in permit fees. In fact, Paul came to me earlier this year with the plan that we thought at first would require laying off about 25 employees. Instead, we sat down and worked on a number of creative strategies to keep people working at BDS, including encouraging people to take buyouts and whatnot. But we've also done something different than I hope the council, as they enter these same kinds of projects, will consider. Knowing that the Water Bureau was leading this project because they will relocate their security staff out there, I asked them to contact Paul Scarlett. And instead of doing what we would traditionally do, which is to contract out to a design firm to design the project, we're actually going to use current BDS staff that are trained as architects and engineers to do this project. The short version is that seven positions that would have otherwise had to have been eliminated are now kept working for a year because of the willingness and the creativity of the Water Bureau and Paul Scarlett to employ those folks to design this project. What was once about $1.7 million budgeted for the design of this project, we think will come under substantially below that by using existing personnel at BDS and key people working. So the overall discussion here today is to approve going forward on the project, but I certainly want to acknowledge the outstanding work of David Schaff, Paul Scarlett, and both of their staffs in being as creative as they have to do more than just one thing, that is build a project, have it be done right, but also in these hard economic times to keep people working. So, David?
Good morning. Mayor Adams, City Council, I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Portland Water Bureau, and as usual, my boss has said everything that I was going to say.
Sorry.
So I just, there are two things that I wanted to talk about very briefly. The need of a new state-of-the-art ECC facility and how we're going to move forward on designing that facility. I'm sure you're all aware that we have a woefully inadequate emergency coordination center for a city the size of Portland. The Water Bureau has its own emergency operations center, and it works out of a mobile trailer. We also have our security staff of 22 people who work out of a mobile trailer. And this facility, when we build it, will replace those mobile trailers. It will put the Water Bureau's emergency management staff and the Portland Office of Emergency Management staff out at the 911 facility in a state-of-the-art facility. We'll also relocate our security staff, and as a side benefit, provide security to the BOEC facility as well. It will include, as I said, staff for those three agencies, offices, and staff space. It will also provide emergency operations center facilities to the Water Bureau, POEM, PBOT, and Multnomah County. It's also being designed and built so that it can be expanded upwards in case there are other jurisdictions that are interested in coming into the facility as well. This is an important and necessary project, and getting this piece done is moving us incrementally along the way to eventually building the facility. The second aspect of the project is the one that Randy just described, and that's how we're going to design the facility. We're proposing a unique approach that will take advantage of the skills and expertise of the BDS staff. As Commissioner Leonard said, we're anticipating approximately 7 full-time equivalents for approximately a year. We'll be taking advantage of architectural background, structural space planning, landscape design. These folks at BDS will be part of the design team that will take the project up to completion of plans and construction specifications. And at that point, we hope we will have identified the resources necessary to build the project and move us along. And that's really about all I had to say. And I don't know if Paul had anything to add to that.
Good morning, Paul Scarlett. morning, Mayor Adams and council members. I mainly just want to echo what Commissioner Leonard said and David Schaff, and how excited we are to be part of this process and to assist in the development of this ECC building. Certainly the benefits for us, we're very excited that we're able to, in a creative way, provide the assistance and also benefit in helping save some positions. We are in some financial struggles with the economics of the city and the nation, and this is one of the ways through ongoing deliberation and just thinking out of the box, we've come up with a solution that will be beneficial on a number of fronts. And Andy Peterson is the division manager for the permitting and plan division section of BDS, and he's the one that's really have been very involved in the detailed discussions between Commissioner's Office and Water Bureau. And do want to thank Andy for his work. But we're excited to be part of this process, and we've had good communication and some good ideas, and everyone's been receptive to these proposals.
Anything you'd like to add?
No, I'm just here to add any or answer any questions if you have.
Questions or discussion from council?
So who bears liability for errors and omissions in the design?
Andy, you want to
the city?
We will have our structural engineers, our architects working for BDS. So they will be the ones that actually stamp the drawings.
Yeah. So the city?
Yes.
There's liability. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, I know when you hire design professionals, they have errors and omission liability coverages, and we're just saying
I think it's
absorb any errors and omissions.
I think it's akin to the attorneys who work for local governments.
Michael Stur is jumping out of the seat. Do you want to come up and say something about that?
Well, yeah, finish that statement. Who was saying that?
I was.
Okay, say that again.
I think it's akin to attorneys working for local governments. They don't, they're not covered under a professional liability fund as a private attorney would be. So I think that the city is accepting its own liability for mistakes that it makes.
Okay, that's good.
I think this is really a fairly simple thing to do. It's just, as you say, outside the box, and we've learned with Commissioner Leonard to do things outside the box. The exact details of the liability we'll have to work out when we let the contract, but ultimately this contract's going to go out of the Water Bureau and I sign the drawings, and they'll meet everybody's standards, and that's the best thing I can say about it.
Well, that's for the plans and specs.
Yeah.
Right. No, I'm talking the design.
Ultimately.
I think David Schaff gave me a good answer there. So our city attorneys, in fact, are covered by the city for any liability issues that arise with your asking our attorney here, Lindley Reese.
We hope so.
Yeah. We do not maintain professional liability insurance as somebody in the private sector does. I'm not quite certain it's a perfect analogy, but.
Okay.
And each of the drawings in the drawing set are stamped by the relevant professional. For example, electrical engineer will have to contract for that, and they'll stamp it, and they'll stand up for their errors and omissions.
And I guess the other, you know, I appreciate the novel approach here, but I guess the other thing I openly wonder about is a potential conflict of interest. I mean, you have the same people who inspect and sign off on construction drawings, and in this case, actually doing the work. I mean, they're in the same bureau.
And we've actually talked about that. That was one of the first things we talked about, and that's something that internally BDS will have to manage it to see that the individual is actually working on the design or not the reviewers.
That's right. They will not. They will be separated from the inspection process.
So you're not planning to contract out the permitting and inspection because we're doing.
We'll do that in.
We typically do the inspections.
Wouldn't that be hard to inspect the work of
there. They probably would look for opportunities to find.
Separate divisions.
Separate divisions, yes.
So do the folks who are going to be doing this have businesses on the side designing? Do they have, is this what they do for their work?
They have maintained their certification as architects, and I'm not sure how much on the side businesses they may be involved in, but they're very expert in designing a variety of facilities. Andy might know more about that.
And several of them that have been identified for this project continue to have come to the city recently. Some of them have worked on some of the major projects in town. We, as far as structural engineering, we have probably one of the best staffs in the country for structural engineering. They continue to do work and review work that is relevant for the country.
Right, but reviewing work is different from designing it.
That's the folks that have been identified to work on this have only come from the private sector within the last 3 years or so. They're design professionals. They're current in what's going on. They maintain their structural engineering stamp. Some of the recent projects they've done, one of the engineers actually did the 911 building that's out there and designed it for one of the private firms here before he came to work for the city. Other engineers have done OHSU buildings on the Hill that are, again, critical functions, critical buildings that need to be maintained. That staff member's been with the city for two and a half years. So they're current in the design philosophies of the marketplace.
And they are all licensed architects and licensed engineers.
Yes. That's correct.
In good standing.
Yes.
And what's the, I don't know if you can even answer the question, but what's the estimate or guesstimate on what we're saving here by doing it internally?
I don't know that we've figured that out yet, partly because the original estimate was made sometime before the changes in the economy. So we're anticipating that the bids that we were expecting should be coming in quite a bit lower than before. And, of course, we're taking a lot of work. We're using BDS for a lot of that work. So
I'm sorry I didn't ask the question. Well, how much in the what would normally be contracted out at an hourly rate or a retainer versus inside? Do you have any estimate on how much?
Actually did an estimate in my office. We're using 7 people full-time. We're assuming with benefits that would equate to somewhere around $1 million. The bid that we got was $1.7 million, and early on, so we think we're conservatively going to save $500,000.
Thank you. Any other questions or conversations?
Well, just I want to just acknowledge that in the ordinance, it says in the therefore section that any contract that the commissioner in charge and auditor may execute must comply with the city's professional, technical, and expert service contracts process. I believe that is, yep, in effect, our insurance policy here. I'm also reminded, we don't have to go into any great detail on this, that city has used other processes where they have contracted out these services and they have resulted in significant litigation and exposure. We don't have to go through those. I'm not persuaded there's an inherently more risk of doing it this way versus a more conventional way, provided in the negotiations and drafting of the contracts, the kinds of issues that my colleagues have identified or addressed, and I'm confident they will be.
Thank you.
So could I ask you, Commissioner Fish, a question about number 8 in the ordinance? It says a competitive and fair selection process will be utilized in selecting the design consultants. And Commissioner Leonard, I don't understand how that would happen if we've already decided who that would be.
Well, we haven't decided who that would be. You're authorizing me to put a request for proposal out on the street to bid for the professional services that we will not be able to.
Oh, I see.
That we cannot utilize through BDS. So this is a normal RFP process.
And have we? It says in number 6 that certain tasks will be outside consulting services. Do we know which tasks those will be?
Well, for instance, as Mike mentioned, we don't have an electrical engineer who we can rely on. So we will be using electrical engineers. We will be looking at whether or not BDS has the ability to do the CAD drawings. There are a number of things that BDS may or may not be able to do for us. So that's what this design firm would be doing for us, filling in the gaps that we have with BDS.
And it says that there's a memorandum of understanding and a joint work plan. Will the memorandum of understanding be coming back to council?
Between the Water Bureau and BDS? I don't think we'd planned on that, no.
How would that come?
And how much will the consultant, what's the estimate for the design professionals?
Our original estimate was between 1.5 and 1.9 million. Now, obviously, we haven't put anything out on the street, and we have a much more narrow scope. So, as Commissioner Leonard said, there has been an estimate that we would save as much as $1 million. We have to wait and see what the bids come in and what we end up having from these folks that are going to fill in these blanks that we'll have with BDS.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, with all due respect, I appreciate the novel approach, but I'm not comfortable today voting to go ahead with this. I want to see some more information. I want to see answers, you know, answers that in writing about the questions I've asked about liability, about the total budget. I mean, I'm hearing in one case we're putting $1 million worth of BDS employees, but we're still looking to spend $1 to $1.7 million on design services.
No.
I'm just saying I'm not comfortable moving ahead on this today, and I need
that. You didn't hear that right. That's not what they said.
Our original estimate for the design of the building was between 1.5 and 1.9 million. The scope of this particular contract will be much more narrow than the original scope. And that's because we will be using architectural, structural, space planning, and landscape design expertise from BDS. So I can't tell you exactly where we're going to end up from a bid standpoint, partly because it's a more narrow scope, partly because the economy has changed to the point that our $1.5 to $1.9 million estimate may be significantly higher than it would be today. So it's hard for me to nail it down exactly how much we will save. We do anticipate some significant savings because we're going to be using in-house staff, existing resources to do the lion's share of the work.
David, could I just maybe just to your estimate is that the in-house costs would, you said, around $1 million, more or less. And that
I said that. He didn't say that.
It's the equivalent of 7 full-time people.
Sorry, that's a guesstimate, an estimate of $1 million. And then What do you estimate what you're bidding out? Noted it's a much more narrow scope, and it's a better contracting environment. Do you have a sense of what you will pay for the outside contracted services?
Not yet. And part of that is because this is a fairly unique beast. We're going to put, as I said, this much more narrow scope out on the street, and we will see what bids we get back. So this is a pilot, if you will, and we will discover what